I never know, and I try not ever to even, well, obviously I don't think about it a lot, but because of a mistake I made a couple of weeks ago, or for the last couple of weeks, I need to say this. I don't have anything to do with this other than teaching the class and directing our discussion, but these lessons are put on a website and on a podcast that you can go listen to, and there are other people in other places that'll email or call and say, man, listen to this lesson and that was helpful, or listen to that lesson and you're nuts, whatever they say. Well, over the last couple of weeks, and I don't know whether y'all have gotten me so inspired or you gotten me so distracted, whatever, that I've forgotten to turn on the recorder. So I'm saying now, with the recorder turned on, I'm saying now to anybody who's listening to this on podcast, I apologize. I forgot to turn on the recorder for about the last 2 or 3 weeks. So what? They can't do anything about it. All right, now.
So there's no proof that you said something.
That's true. There's no proof that I said anything bad about anybody. Though we know my past and we know my record, don't we? All right.
And if they'll come, there'll be a better chance they don't miss it.
That's right. If you come, yes, or something. Yeah. What's that? That's a short trip. All right, guys. Let's get everybody on the same page. If you're here for the first time, you maybe not know what we're doing. The book of Joshua was written to a group of people. Was written about a group of people, written for a group of people that were moving on. They'd come out of a bondage, a horrible slavery in Egypt. They'd spent 400 years in that slavery. 40 years they had spent in the wilderness, lost in their minds, but wandering in according to the direction and the will of God to cleanse them, to prepare them, to take a hold of the promises that God had for them. Now, when the book opens, Joshua chapter 1, we find out that Moses, their leader, has died. Now, immediately what we'd start doing, we'd start saying, well, it's all over. I mean, Moses was the fellow that got us out of Egypt. Moses was the fellow that got us through the Red Sea. Moses was the fellow that got bread out of heaven, water out of a rock. Man, Moses, he's our man. If he can't do it, nobody can. And now he's dead. So what am I going to do? Where am I going to turn? What can I say? Well, he comes to Joshua and says, Joshua, here's what I want you to do. I want you to help these people move on. Now, in this room, I don't think you'll ever hear anybody say, it's time for you to move on. None of us are smart enough or know your heart enough or know your experience or your hurts enough to say, well, it's time for you to get over it and to move on. Uh-uh. But I know there come a time when you decide it is time for you to move on. I know there will be a time to move on. And when you're ready to move on, these words from God, how He worked with these people, through these people, for these people, will help you move on. Now, for the first 12 chapters, I made these folks like almost memorize them. I'm not doing that anymore because it's a new year and I had to be nice. And that's really been hard on me this year, y'all, I got to tell you. But somebody remind me of something from those first 12 chapters. Remind me of something from those first 12 chapters that we learned from God, from this example, of what we need to do to move on. Chapter 1, be strong and courageous. Keep going. Give me another one. Man, when you've messed up, get back to basics. There are things I don't understand. There are decisions that are hard to make. But there are some things in the Bible that are very simple. Didn't say they were easy. Said they were simple. Very simple. And if I do what those simple, right things, it's amazing what can take place in my life. Give me one more. Man, show your faith. There was a lady that you wouldn't have invited to church unless you came to some place like this. There's some lady that you wouldn't have brought to the family reunion. You'd never want your parents to know that you'd spend any time with her. And yet she was the one woman in a whole city of Jericho that rescued some fellas that believed in God. And because of her faith in God, they promised her that when the city fell, she'd be spared. You remember what her name is? You know, one of the reasons we remember her name is not just she had the faith to put that scarlet cord outside her window so that she would be spared, as God's men had agreed, but it's because that woman married a fellow who, and they had a baby who 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 was born in Bethlehem, named Jesus. Rahab, a harlot, a religious prostitute, a despicable sinner like me, because of her faith, not only saved her family, she was used by God to save the world. Look around you. There are folks in this room that have messed up so bad they can't hardly breathe. There's some folks in here that have messed up so bad they just don't know what they're going to do. And they're afraid every time they meet somebody they're going to remember what they're like. There was a big workshop thing at a church here in town, and somebody asked me, "Are you going?" I said, "Nope." Reason I don't go?
"I don't want to be kicked out."
That's good. Well, there may be truth to that, but you never know when you're going to run across somebody that what they're going to do is they're going to remember what you did. And there are people that want to remind you of what you did. Thank God He's not that kind of God.
Amen.
And this woman's life changed the world and gave me a chance so I wouldn't have to remember. God doesn't remember the mess we made. If you will let God, if you'll show your faith, if you'll let Him remove your reproach, if you'll get back to basics, if you'll build something for your children's future, God will help you move on out of your mess into a promised land. Right? Okay. Now go back. Get right in the middle of the book. You remember the chapter? The chapter that y'all loved so much, that y'all thought was so funny? Joshua 13. That's where we began this year. We started the second half of the book. Joshua 13. God tells him, "You are very old." Very old. I'm going to keep yelling. One of these days I'm going to snap, folks. It's just going to be all over. Well, he said, "You're very old, but you still got a lot of work to do." I'm telling you guys, we need to remember that. It doesn't matter how old you are. I told you before, I'm going to give you a quick overview again. I've heard somebody 20 years, oh, no, it was somebody 29 about to turn 30, say to me, "Oh man, I just thought by the time I got 30, life would be easier." Are you kidding? Wait till you get to be 60. I'm not there yet, but I'm not sneaking up on it. I'm waving my arms as I go. But lady looking at me, she was about my age, and she said, "I just thought by the time I got this age," and she didn't want to say, she said, "I just thought my life would be easier." You get 80 years old, you're going to be saying the same thing. Who gave us the idea that by the time we got a certain age, all of a sudden we would just have everything all together? We're going to have to keep working and serving and obeying God forever. So let's get over that. "Well, I just thought I'd be able to retire." No. We're going to serve the Lord till we die. Joshua 13 says, "You're old, you got work to do." Joshua 14 says, if you're going to go, if you're going to move on, how do you move on?
Wholeheartedly.
Says it three times. When God repeats something, it means we better pay attention to it. This old halfway, lukewarm, "Don't know if I'm really going to do it, don't know if I'm not going to do it," has got to go. If we're going to be serious about rebuilding our lives, if we're going to be serious about moving on out of a mess and into a promised land, if you're going to be a better husband, you've got to decide it wholeheartedly. You're going to be a better wife, you've got to decide it wholeheartedly. You're going to be a better kid, you're going to be a better parent. You're going to be a better employee, you're going to be a better boss. You're going to be a better friend. You've got to do it wholeheartedly. Halfway doesn't get it. And this Caleb fellow was an old man, but because he had served the Lord wholeheartedly and was still serving the wholeheartedly, he went up to the Lord and said, I want that mountain. I'll take it, and it's where the big bad guys live. I want it. I want to have that kind of heart when I'm 85. Now, my dad happens to be 85. Won't tell you how old my mother is. Born the same year. I won't tell you that. But I see that in him. My dad doesn't back off. He's got something he's got to get done. He does it. Now, does he walk slower? Yes. But he gets it done. Man, I want to have that kind of spirit in me now and however long the Lord lets me live. You got 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Those chapters, and I think that's one of the ones we missed, so people are saying, I don't remember that lesson. They don't, but you do. Do you remember what he said? There were seven tribes that did not take possession of the promise of God. And so what did Joshua have to ask them? How long are you going to wait? How long are you going to wait to take possession of the promise God made you? Now, we asked that question last week, wasn't it, last week? Folks, how long are you going to wait? How long are you going to wait before you accept the promise of God to receive forgiveness? How long are you going to wait before you accept the promise of God to rebuild your life? How long are you going to wait before you let God give you what He promised when if you seek first His kingdom, He'll take care of all that food and clothes stuff? How long are we going to wait before God, for God to do that? Well, we don't have to wait for God to do it. He's waiting for us to do it so He can keep His promise to us. All right, chapter 20. That's what we're looking at tonight. I'm going to read a piece of it, and then we'll draw our conclusion, we'll draw our point, and then we'll discuss it. Then the Lord said to Joshua, tell the Israelites to designate the cities of refuge. I'm not for sure that wouldn't be a pretty good name for this place. Church of Refuge. House of Refuge. Stained carpet of refuge. However you want to say it. As I instructed you through Moses, so anyone, now watch this, so anyone who kills a person accidentally and unintentionally may flee there and find protection from the avenger of blood. When he flees to one of these cities, he is to stand in the entrance of the city gate and state his case before the elders of that city. Then they are to admit him into their city and give him a place to live with them. If the avenger of blood pursues him, they must not surrender the one accused because he killed his neighbor unintentionally and without malice aforethought. He is to stay in that city until he has stood trial before the assembly and until the death of the high priest who is serving at that time. Then he may go back to his own home in the town from which he fled. Now we're going to stop there. Here's the point. These folks are moving on, and they're trying to build a new world, trying to build a new nation, and yet God reminds them, when you are ready to move on, you've got to don't forget mercy. Don't forget mercy. Be merciful to be filled with mercy. Did you notice it says the one who did this unintentionally may flee there and find protection. May this place always be that kind of place where people that have done wrong will find mercy. Now, having said that, you're going to have to really focus, and I apologize for not being able to make it clearer or more interesting. We got to go through some layers of things. Do you understand, according to the law of God at this time, that if you murdered someone, then your life was to be taken? That was the law. You heard it said before and can quote it, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and life for life. It was the word and the will of God that if someone murdered someone, they had to pay with their life. Now stop a second. Were there exceptions to that? What was the exception? We have the same exceptions today. We have the same exceptions today. What's one of those exceptions? If it was self-defense, that would be one of the exceptions. Give me another one. If it was unintentional, we don't call that murder, we call that manslaughter. Now, I need to say this, though, so we don't misunderstand. And I've got to draw it pretty clear, because I don't want us to swing too far. I want us to hear what God's... I want us to understand what He's saying about mercy, but not go so far that we get so caught up in mercy we forget truth. God said someone murders, they have to pay with their life. He makes that same kind of statement in the New Testament. Now, I'm going to say it. You write it down. You can read it. We'll discuss it when you need to discuss it. But in Romans 13, God said He put authorities in power so that they could punish the evildoer. And He gave them the right to take up the sword. That word sword, that idea sword, is the idea of a capital punishment or the execution of war. I didn't write it. God said it. We need to discuss it. We can. You holler at me, we'll discuss it. But the point is, there is a penalty. There's a penalty that God sees as righteous and reasonable once someone intentionally, listen to my words, intentionally commits murder. Now, there are other things involved. Of course, He's dealing with murder here. But that intentional is the issue. There are people that have intentionally hurt you. There are people that have intentionally damaged someone you loved. That's different than if it's accidental. Now, is the pain the same? Yes. Are sometimes the consequences to you the same? Yes. But their intention makes a difference on how we react to them. That's what God's teaching us here. We want to understand that there needs to be a place for mercy. Now, why do we think we need to learn that there's a place for mercy? Brad's right on. If you don't know it, let's go ahead and admit it. The reason I understand that there needs to be mercy is because I need it. I need mercy. Now, time out. A little kid is throwing rocks. He's told, don't throw rocks. And he keeps throwing rocks. I never did this. I had brothers. But a little kid throwing rocks. He's been told, don't throw rocks. He's throwing rocks. One of those rocks flies and cacks a guy in the brain pan, you know. Makes him bleed. All the kids point to that. He threw that rock. The kid said, I didn't try to. I didn't mean to. Do you understand, though, that's not an excuse? Do you understand that's not an excuse? A guy gets drunk, drives a car, kills someone. He can say all day long, he didn't try to. He didn't mean to, but the consequence is the same. That person's dead. I guess what I want to say to us, because some of us struggle with those kinds of things, whether it's drinking or drugs or just irresponsible, that's the word, irresponsible behavior. You can't look at the consequences of that irresponsible behavior and you demand that somebody treats you with mercy. That's not how this works. He's not talking about what you expect other people, how you expect other people to treat you. He's talking about how we treat other people that have hurt us. If it's intentional, here's what the Bible says. Mark it down so you know where to look. Matthew chapter 18. And because of our number tonight and stuff, I'd make you work through this other times, but I'm going to be nice. Matthew 18. Matthew 18. In Matthew 18, it says, if your brother sins against you, that does not mean that he insulted you, does not mean that he made fun of you, does not mean that he hurt your feelings. Hurt feelings are not sin. Well, I don't like that, because no, I know you don't like that. When you pout, you want to that person to be held accountable. But the point is, hurt feelings are not necessarily sin. But if somebody sins against you, mark it down. If they sin against you, do you have any recourse? Yes. What does it say do? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Man, I'm going to knock him out. Yeah, that'll be good. That'll work. How's that work for some of you in here? Some of you have tried it. Somebody messed with you, and you decided you'd take out a little vengeance on them. And how'd that happen? How'd that work for you? Yeah. You spent some nights in a warm, cozy place with them pretty orange coveralls. That's not the way this works. That's not how this works, y'all. Somebody sins against you, it says, you go to him. You go to him. You show him, hey buddy, you did this. And then watch his response. It happens all the time. I talk to people and I'll say, man, well, why don't you go talk to him? Why don't you? And it can be a husband to a wife, wife to a husband, parent to kids, kids to parents, brother to brother, sister to sister. Somebody sins against you, you go talk to them. Well, I ain't going to talk to them. They did me wrong. Well, how are you going to get this thing worked out if you don't talk to them? So you go talk to them and you say, you did something wrong. If they react, if they listen, what have you done? Matthew 18, it says you gained a brother. That happens, folks, and I'm telling you, if I ever do something that is wrong towards you, you come ask me and say, I think you did something wrong to me. Why would you do something like that? And if I'm any kind of man, what am I going to do? And I can't imagine me not doing it because I've had to do it so many times in my life. I will admit it and I will apologize. I will try my best to make it right. Now, if I think you're wrong, what will I do? I'll apologize anyway. No, if you're wrong and I didn't sin against you, I want to try and make sure that's clear. No, I think you may have misunderstood. There may have been a misunderstanding. There may be some other thing going on here. But if somebody sins against you, it says go talk to them. And when you talk to them, by yourself, by the way, it says, it doesn't mean tell all your family. And I love you, but I tell you what, we got a mess in this place sometimes. We got a mess in this place. Something happens in one of your families, and you know what happens? It goes everywhere. Whoa, slow that thing down, Martha. Get it back under control. Something goes wrong, you alone go talk to that one. If they respond, that's good. Now that doesn't mean there's not going to be other consequences, but that's good. Right? If they don't listen to you, what does it say to do? It says to take one or two with you. Doesn't mean to take 100 or 200. It doesn't say beat the tar out of him. It says take one or two with you. That means that there's two or three of you at most. And you go sit down with him and say, brother, what you did was wrong. If he listens, those two or three know about it and he knows about it, so y'all are hugging and everything's good. May still have to be consequences dealt with, but y'all are good together. If he doesn't listen, what do you do? Matthew 18 says, if he doesn't listen, that's when you have to go tell the church. And the reason you're telling the church is so everybody can get together to help that guy figure out that he needs to turn back to God. If he doesn't listen to the whole church, guess what? He doesn't want to be with the church. He wants to be against the church. So you let him have what he wants. He does not want to be a part of your fellowship. Then you make sure he understands, you're right, you're not a part of our fellowship. You let him know that what's happened already in heaven toward God is about to happen to him on earth. He's about to lose his place with God. He's already lost his place with God. He's about to lose his place with the church. Now, hang on. I'm talking about if somebody sins against you. I'm talking about if somebody sins against you. Now, if your feelings are hurt, that's a different issue. But sometimes your feelings can be so hurt that you can't get over them. So listen to me. If your feelings are hurt so bad that you can't get over them, what would be the reasonable, logical thing to do?
Puppy?
Is go talk to them and say, did you mean to do that? Was that intentional or unintentional? Well, some people can get their feelings hurt. This sounds so bad. I'm saying this sounds bad. Are y'all, you hear me? I'm saying this sounds bad. I'm using it as an illustration. But people send me invitations to their weddings. Oh. You know, I love people getting married. I think it's a wonderful thing. You know what a wedding does? A wedding wastes 2 good days of your life because you got to go to the rehearsal and then you got to go to the wedding and you got to dress up and you don't even get something good to eat. You get that old nasty white cake. I mean, very few weddings have chocolate cake or ice cream and stuff. Or fried chicken. I've never been to a wedding and had fried chicken, ever. So somebody, now I'm just teasing, and I sent him an invitation to my wedding. I'm not offended. I'm not coming, but I'm not offended. The point is, folks, sometimes if you don't send somebody an invitation, they'll get their feelings hurt. And if you get your feelings hurt and that bothers you that somebody didn't send you an invitation, would you call me first? I'll give you my invitation. Yeah. No, you call. It's okay to talk to them. It's okay to say to them, did I do something? Did I hurt your feelings? Because I didn't get it and that kind of hurt my feelings. It's okay to say that. It's okay to say that. What you don't want to do is get that old pout, grouchy, victim glare. Man, some of us, man, get our feelings hurt and all of a sudden we just turn into grouches and we've been. And I used to be, when I worked at big church, I'd hear it all the time. I'm just telling you the truth. It happened with a lot of sisters. Sisters would come up and say, well, Sister so-and-so didn't say anything to me today. And I was young, I didn't know any better. So I'd say, well, did you say anything to her? Well, no, because if she's going to be that way, I'm not going to. How does that work? You don't talk to me, so I ain't talking to you? What happens for long? Ain't nobody talking to you. Ooh. That's a possibility, yeah. Maybe we need to say. The point is, you can't do that. You got to talk to them, right? You got to go find out what the problem is. Okay. Matthew 18 says, you talk to them, you take somebody to talk to them, you tell the whole church if you need to talk to them, but you don't. Try and get this started, right? Because you'd be surprised how many hurts could be done away with, how many troubles could be fixed if you did it Jesus' way. Okay, now, there's two other things I need to show you about this thing of mercy. Or a couple, well, two or three more. Probably lots more, and I just don't know them. One of the things I want to make sure we understand, that just because we're supposed to be merciful, if a person will not admit that they've done wrong, if they don't admit, you know, when you tell the church, it's right. It's always right to agree with God, right? So if a person refuses to listen to God and you are to withdraw your fellowship from them, just like God has done, you're agreeing with God about that person. Now, we have grown up in a religious culture, and I think it has to do more with Oprah and Disney than anything, but I hear it sometimes in our churches. Well, you just need, and I'm going to say this, just listen. Well, you just need to forgive them. You just need to forgive them. You just need to forgive them. And folks, I am all for forgiving folks. I am all for forgiving folks. I'm not saying I'm good at it, but I'm saying I'm all for it because Jesus forgave me and it's right for me to forgive others. But are there some people that God did not forgive? Are there some people that God does not forgive? Now some of you are going, I don't know, can I answer that out loud? Are there some people that God does not forgive? Yes. There are some people that God does not forgive. Is it always right to agree with God? Yes. So let me say this. Take what Jesus is saying up in Matthew 18 about the dealing with somebody who has sinned and follow it to its end. If they repent, if they apologize, then you will try to forgive them like Jesus tried to forgive them. But if they don't, if they refuse to listen to Jesus, if they refuse to make any kind of amends towards you, it is right to agree with Jesus still, right? And if Jesus withdrew His fellowship from them, then it is not only right, it is responsible and required to withdraw your fellowship from them. To the point that He will say, a couple of places, Matthew 18 again, when a man has caused a little one to sin, or done damage to a little one, Jesus said it would be far better for him to have a millstone tied around his neck and him to be cast into the ocean. Okay, now folks, who's saying that? The Prince of Peace. The Lord of Love. The Mentor of Mercy. I had to dig that mentor up real quick. I hadn't thought of that. The Mentor of Mercy. The God of Grace. I believe all of those words and I'm grateful for His mercy in my life and I don't deserve any of it. But Jesus said there are some people that it will be better for them to have a millstone tied around their neck and them to drop bubbling to the bottom of the sea than to what He's going to do with them. Some of you in this room have been hurt. Some of you have been sinned against. Some of you have been so damaged that one of the things that haunts you is you can't forgive that person. And it's not because that person has begged your forgiveness. It's not because that person has tried to make things right through the grace and the will of God. That person has not cared. That person has been callous to you. Do you understand? It's always right to agree with Jesus. And there are people that you have a right to protect yourself from. I didn't write it. Jesus did. He will even say in Matthew 7, when He speaks to us about not being judgmental, don't you judge other people, He says, because the judgment that you use with other people is what's going to be used on you. Now that was Rex's Revised. What you've heard if you went to church was, judge not that you be not judged, for with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged. Okay, now it's been quoted and now it's been explained, all right? But you know right after that what He says? Don't cast your pearls before swine and don't you give what is sacred to the dogs. I didn't write that, Jesus did. Check the red letters. There are some people that you have a right to protect yourself from. There are some people that you have a right, and not just a right, a responsibility to keep yourself from being damaged by them again. There are some people in this world, I didn't say it, Jesus did, that are dogs and pigs, and you and I have the right to acknowledge that and to protect ourselves from them, and the responsibility of protecting ourselves from them. Now, do we need to be careful about who we call a dog and a pig? Yes. Do we need to be careful about being judgmental? Yes. Do we need to be careful that we forgive those who want and beg and ask to be forgiven? Yes. But there are some that refuse to listen to God, Matthew 18. There are some that don't want that forgiveness and therefore they are not forgiven. And so it's always right to agree with God, right? Now, there's so much involved in this subject. You remember the story of Joseph? You got to write it down so you can look at it sometime. We've studied it before, Genesis chapter 49 and 50. The story starts back in chapter 37 of Genesis. Joseph is a favored son. Brothers hate him because he's the favorite son and he's got a little special coat, many colors. And they hate him. And he has these special dreams, and they hate him. One day they get a chance to, and they hate him. They hate his coat off of him, hate him into a pit, hate him into a slave walking behind camels all the way to Egypt. He ends up in jail, longer than he was deserved to be, though he never deserved to be. And finally, he stands before those same brothers at the end of the book. The boy they tried to destroy, God has raised to the throne of Egypt. And now he's not wearing no coat of many colors. He's got the king of the world's coat on. And they come to him because they're afraid he's going to punish them. And he says these words, "What you did," now listen to me. He said, "What you did to me, you meant for evil." Stop. Joseph is going to forgive those brothers. And it's right that he's going to forgive them because they're apologizing. They want his forgiveness. They're seeking his forgiveness. So he's going to extend forgiveness. He's going to extend mercy. But notice what he does. He says, "What you did, you meant for evil." There's some people in your life that did you wrong. And they meant to do it. But now they're trying to make up for it. They've apologized, or they're trying to make amends. It is okay for you to acknowledge that what they did was wrong. I am sick and tired. Sick and tired of hearing us say somebody hurt you and you're broken and you're disturbed by what they did, and then they come up and say, "Well, I'm sorry. Oh, it's okay. It's nothing." No, it was something. Don't make it like it wasn't something. If it hurt you, if it damaged you, acknowledge the damage. Yeah, it hurt. That really hurt. But I love what he says next. "What you did, you meant for evil, but God meant it for good." Folks, everybody in this room, especially those of us who are ready to move on and move away from the pains that other people have caused us, we have got to be ready. We've got to be ready to recognize that God is working things that we can't understand. And while somebody may have meant to do us wrong, God meant to do us right. They meant to do wrong, I'll let God handle them. But God meant to do for me right. So what can I do? What can I do? For even the people that have hurt me, what can I do? I can thank God for what He's done through their crime, what He did for me. Through what they did wrong, He did right. Joseph is going to forgive those guys. He's going to extend to them mercy. And it's not because it was unintentional. Theirs was intentional. But he said, and he acknowledged it. He said, "What you did was wrong. You did it for evil, but God meant it for good." It's okay for you to do the same thing. And there'll come a time, folks, if you're going to move on, you're going to have to be ready to extend mercy to the people that have done the damage. Now I'm going to say it one more time, and then I'm going to tie the knot. This idea of mercy, this idea of giving people who've done things unintentionally a place of refuge, that shows the mercy of God. But His mercy wasn't just shown in those cities of refuge. It was shown in the commandment, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. Because somebody hits you so hard to knock out your eye, you want to do more than take out his eye. So even in the commandment of taking an eye for an eye was mercy. Tooth for tooth, guy hits you so hard to knock out a tooth, what do you want to do? Take his tooth, his eye, and his pocket watch. I mean, you want everything. But somebody take your eye, somebody take your tooth, somebody, you want to take their life. How many folks killed? How many folks killed on our side of town here? They get in a fuss about something that doesn't matter at all. And the guy can't make it right, so you just got to kill him. Nah. Life's too valuable for that. God built mercy in, even into that commandment. But He built mercy here, too. A place for unintentional wrongs where people could come and find protection because they didn't mean it. There are people in our lives that have hurt us. We've got to extend mercy. To those who want that mercy, we extend it. We acknowledge the wrong, but we understand how good God has been to us. So much so that Jesus will teach us, "Blessed are the merciful, they'll obtain mercy. Now, guys, he's not saying that we walk around, you've got to be merciful to me. You've got to be merciful to me. You've got to be merciful to me. It's not that. It's not me using God's commandment on them. You've got to be merciful to me. I did something wrong, but you've got to forgive me. You've got to forgive me. No. That's not how you read that. It says, blessed are the merciful. We extend the mercy. We extend the mercy. God's already extended mercy to us. Freely we received, now let's freely give. God extended us mercy, let's extend that mercy to others. Not expecting them to do the same. Talking to a gentleman who will be hearing this, and I prayed for him today because he's got tough days ahead. But I was talking on the phone the other day and he said, Rex, he said, I used to listen to you on your podcast, and I used to listen and I hear you say things like, I understand why people don't want me to come teach at their church. I can understand why people don't want to be around me anymore because of the sins I committed. He said, I'd say something like, you know, no matter how they treat me, I deserve to be stoned. If I'd lived under the law, I deserve to be stoned to death, and anything less than stoning has to be mercy, right? Well, I would make that point, and I've said it to you and mean it. I've talked about it. He said, used to hear you say that, and I'd say, Rex, come on, get real. Get over it. I mean, it's not that bad. Now he's going through something that's as tough or worse than anything I ever went through. And he said, you know, I understand what you're saying now. I understand. There are things, folks, we don't understand about what causes someone else to do what they do. So we need to be ready to extend mercy. Not because they're going to give us mercy or they already have given us mercy, no. We extend mercy because that's what Jesus did for us. And that's what He asked of us. And as we extend that mercy, we'll also find mercy ourselves. Sometimes, when folks are trying to move on, they can't get past the wrongs others have done them. You can hear a wife say it about her husband, say a husband will say it about his wife, parents about their kids, or kids about their parents. And it's always, well, you know what she did, you know what he did, you know what they did, you know what they did. Sometimes it's church folks, sometimes it's family folks. You can't get past, you cannot move on if you keep dragging all them with you. Extend mercy to those who want mercy. To the others. Agree with God. If that God is not in fellowship with them, you don't have to be either. So it's okay to let it go and to move on. What do you mean? If I do that, then that means they get by with it. Where'd we get that idea? We don't get by with it. They don't get by with it. Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay. I know there's times I'd like to run over in my truck. Yep. There's times I'd like to do things to them and treat them the same way they treated me. What you do is you let God handle them. He'll take care of them. You take care of you. And be merciful. That's the way He treated us, right? Let's pray. Father, thank You for today. God, thank You so much for these folks. They could have been anywhere doing anything, and they chose to be here. Father, there are people in this room that have been so hurt by family, friends, that it's disrupted their lives. It's damaged their lives. It's put them in a place where they can't seem to get ahead. They can't move on. Can't make a better life. God, would You help us extend mercy? And now, Father, all of us together, whether somebody's mistreated us or not, it's not the point right now. We did. I did. I mistreated people. And I'm sorry. And I beg your mercy. And though my sin was intentional and damaging and devastating for families and churches and friends, God forgive me and help me be like you that way, forgiving others who've sinned against me. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, y'all. I need to hear that.